reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. This is Matt.
And this is Liz.
On this week's show, we're talking about Nick Foles being back in our lives.
Tight end continues to be a nightmare with Hooper and Kittle out, but we got some dart throws for you.
It's actually finally for real stash season, and we're ranking the backup running backs you need to pick up.
Plus, we look at a glut of wide receiver threes and decide who has the ceiling, who has the floor, and why they're in that mess in the first place.
And then we go through every game on the Week 11 slate and give you one thing, sometimes more than one, that you need to know.
In a Week 11 preview.
So go ahead and listen away.
Bye.
Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. We've got Matt Harmon and producer Brett. That other guy, he's not here today. I don't know why.
He's working on the Yahoo Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
Ooh, with Dalton Daldon and Andy Barron.
See, yeah, you know the cast if you're into fantasy basketball at all.
And you should be, given that cast.
Then subscribe to that podcast.
Yeah, and we're goo. Producing fire.
Beautiful.
the new Barry White of The Office.
I think I had him a little shook when I said that. But anyway, there's news, guys. This is breaking. There's a Super Bowl 52 rematch this weekend, and it's pretty exciting. The hero of that game is starting for the Jacksonville Jaguars for the first time since his week one injury. It's Big Thick Nick, and he is back in Jacksonville.
Is that the I don't know if that's the typical nickname.
I changed the word in the middle.
Are you making an accusation about what he's been doing during his off time? Getting a little fatter?
Hey, we're all getting ready. Oh,
we've all talked about what happens after Halloween through the end of the year.
Amen.
Fat season. So let's talk about this because there is a change. Do you anticipate it, Matthew, having any effect on, or if you do or you don't, do you anticipate it having any effect on Jacksonville's offense? And if so, what could you potentially see happening? I got thoughts too, but I'll let you go first because I'm so generous.
Awesome. Well, I think that part of the appeal of Gardner Minshew was not just the Gardner Minshew experience and who he was and that he played really well, but also I think his play brought out a reminder that this cast is actually pretty good in Jacksonville. DJ Chark, obviously, is a good player. Chris Conley, your boy, Liz, one of your actual boys, not like a Jordan Howard creation thing. One of your guys is actually, played pretty well. I think he's been a valuable free agent pickup. D.D. Westbrook's a solid slot receiver when he's catching the ball. And Fournette is having a workhorse year. And I think that my expectations for Foles now are much better coming off this injury than they were coming into the year, because I know that this offense is a lot better than I expected it to be.
So I'm interested to see how the target distribution happens here, because we know that obviously DJ Chark was Gardner Minshew's guy. Part of the reason that Chris Conley was actually my guy was because of the offseason reports of the chemistry between Nick Foles and Chris Conley. And he also, in addition to Chark, has a really awesome athletic profile and great speed. He's only had a 15% target share with Gardner Minshew under center, though. So I don't know. And then both Chark and Didi have had 22 and 21% respectively. So I'm not sure how that shakes out. I don't know if this is take lock, so I'll admit that it might be. But this week, Conley is likely to be covered by Marvell Tell. It's a rookie out of USC.
Boom. Marvell Tell. That's how you say it?
I mean,
Marvell Tell scouting report in a big spot. Let's go.
So I would just imagine that if this is Foles' real first time under center, not technically his first time, but the first time in a long time and hopefully the whole game, he might look for familiarity and look for an exploitable matchup. And Connolly offers both of those things. I guess the other real question is, can Foles continue to lift this offense at least as well as Gardner Minshew did, so that Leonard Fournette's ability here isn't negatively affected? Obviously, the problem with Fournette is not the volume or the yards necessarily, but the fact that he's only had one touchdown all year. And the Colts, they've only allowed one score to opposing running backs over the last 4 weeks, and that was Royce Freeman back in week 8.
Sure. I mean, I think Foles, the thing about Nick Foles is that it's all about what's going on around him, and it's about the ecosystem. So if, like I said earlier, that the offense has become much better than I expected it to be, then I think Foles can therefore thrive in that situation. We also can't discount his familiarity with the system, all that type of stuff.
And that's a great point.
It's not for nothing. I don't know how much it's worth, but it's not worth nothing that the last time we saw Foles in the regular season as a Jacksonville Jaguar, he went 5 for 8, 75 yards and a touchdown right down the field. If you combine the performance of him and Gardner Minshew in that Week 1 performance against the Kansas City Chiefs, who we know by now are a much better pass defense and they are a run defense. So overall, I'm excited about Foles in this offense. I think it kind of sucks for Minshew, who I do expect to have like a future in the league and who is playing really well. But at the same time, like, it's good that Nick Foles gets his chance. This is a good situation overall. I don't think this is a St. Louis Rams type of situation with Nick Foles where he was a mess because the ecosystem was a mess. It's not as good as Philadelphia where he left, but it's somewhere in between.
Let's talk about tight ends because it continues to be a horror.
Gross.
So my thank you next Will Disley replacement, Jacob Hollister, had himself a great day on Monday night. A great night, I guess I should say, on Monday. But he's on bye this week, so we don't really want to talk about him. Austin Hooper is out for a month, so I don't really want to mess with Luke Stocker, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, really? Are you sure?
Do you?
No. Okay. No. Kittle's out a second straight week.
Yep.
So we're banged here.
So, I mean, we are banged, except Ross Dwelly does have Arizona this week. This is, by the way, the backup to George Kittle, who was third in team targets with 7 looks on Monday night in that overtime loss to the Seahawks that the 49ers had. He's super available. Also, Emmanuel Sanders may not really play in this one. And if he does, I wouldn't be surprised if he's just a decoy.
Yeah.
He went through walkthroughs today. We're recording on Thursday. And Kyle Shanahan did say that Sanders didn't need to practice in order to play, which sounds to me like they're going to put him out on the field because they know they have to put bodies out on the field. But I don't think Kendrick Bourne is going to do it for you every week.
No.
That obviously opens things up for Deebo Samuel, who's a player that you and I have been high on at various points throughout the season and throughout the offseason. But at the tight end position, Dwelly and Breed is out for this one, too. So Dwelly, I do think, especially given the matchup against Arizona, they're averaging a touchdown a week to the tight end position. You could do a lot worse.
You could definitely do worse.
He's available in 95% of leagues, by the way.
I would say, too, watching that game on Monday night, it felt like as the game went on, after Sanders was out, Dwelly became more of a focus of Jimmy Garoppolo because he realized, like, I can't rely on any of these other guys. Even Deebo Samuel, who had a really good game Monday night, also, he had a couple drops. Pettis is just like, get this guy, like, put him out the pasture.
Seems like,
I don't know.
Like, so frail and, like, lacking in physicality. And also, the success of his usage relies so much on timing.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations that, like, maybe I could see the Dante Pettis thing going in a couple different directions. Like, we just never hear from Dante Pettis again, or, like, he comes back next year, because we know that talent is there.
Yeah, but like, the coaching staff is out on him, and that's like...
That's usually a bad
sign. A stinky thing.
I was going to say, Kyle Shanahan even said after the game, Dante Pettis is going to keep losing opportunities if he keeps doing nothing with his opportunities right now. So, I don't know. They're a complete mess in the wide receiver core if Sanders isn't there, and Deebo doesn't continue to step up, though I really like him this week. So, I like this call. I mean, would you rather play your guy Dwelly or Noah Fant this week?
I don't think Noah Fant scores, but I think Dwelly will see less opportunities and probably have fewer yards, but he has, because of the matchup, higher touchdown upside. I think Fant, though, is going to have the higher floor because he's just going to have more opportunities.
I think Fant does score.
Against Minnesota.
They're the only team in the NFL to not have allowed a tight end touchdown this year.
You regress to the mean.
You regress to the mean because they've also allowed the third most catches. So, like, they're a team that you can pick on with the tight end. They just happen to have not allowed a touchdown this year. And I think Fant, coming off his obvious best game of the season, a little inflated by big plays, whatever, they're coming off a bye, too. Perhaps this is a chance with him to continue to get more playing time. He's playing, like, over 80% of the snaps right now, so...
Also another Emmanuel Sanders affected piece.
Yeah, I mean, this is like 3 degrees of Manny Sanders. Yeah.
Did you know, Matt, that after he drew a season-high 8 targets in Week 8 and went off for 115 yards and a score in Week 9, he became the Broncos' most productive single-season tight end since 2015?
Wow. That is not
It's not a great stat.
Not a high bar to clear.
I mean, it's a great stat, but it's not a great stat.
Because Fant has pretty much on balance been terrible this mm-hmm. year. And, like, I mean, I guess he's better than the Huermans and the Butts and all these other guys that they were rolling out there after the great Tony Scheffler took his
AJ
exits.
Derby.
Y'all forgot. How could I forget?
And Julius Thomas had a nice run.
Oh, well, yes. That's the guy, Julius Thomas.
For what it's worth, I have Fant projected for 5 receptions and 63 yards, but no touchdown. I have not done a fearless forecast on Ross Dwelly, but I can. How about 3 catches for 39 and a touch?
Could be worse. It could be worse. I love Jared Cook this week.
Oh, go for it. I have a different Saint that I'm interested in.
I mean, it's Jared Cook season. He had a lot of volume coming off the bye week. Didn't turn into production against Atlanta, but I think it's going to happen against the Bucs this week.
Okay.
Plus, like, again, you're taking Dwelly over Cook?
I mean, probably not. But
yeah, I mean, we're getting to, like, Cook's like tight end 7. It's like, I'm excited. You know what I mean?
I have a question for you, though. Would you rather have, looking at these Yahoo consensus ranks, would you rather have Jared Cook or Greg Olsen coming off crazy outing? Something I really listen to follow up with something you said on last week's pod, by the way, while you're thinking, there you go. I'm filling the time for you. Anytime you want to answer, go.
I was stopping now because you was trying to catch all your words. I was bracing myself for something a little bit more disgusting than that, but
like a G-reg reference?
No, just like some tight end that I've never heard of that plays for the Dolphins or whatever. I don't know. Anyways, I went on Chris Harris's podcast Monday morning. And we had a bit of a difference of opinion about one Greg Olsen. He thought it was just like garbage time production. No big deals. They were trying to come back. I was like, I thought it was interesting that we finally saw a connection between Greg Olsen and Kyle Allen. We haven't seen that since week 3 during his first start against those Arizona Cardinals that give up all the production to the tight ends. I don't know. I had notes on it. I don't have my exact notes in front of me, but, you know, nevertheless, like, he was catching sub 58% of his passes in all those games up until last week against the Packers. Also, I think, I don't know if this is the point you're going to make, but last week's podcast, I noted that Olsen definitely, even in that game against the Packers, still shows a lot of frustration when Kyle Allen misses him. I don't think they have a very good rapport with each other. They play the Falcons this week, but I don't know. Go ahead.
So according to a quote that Olsen gave the Charlotte Observer after that game against Green Bay, Olsen praised Kyle Allen, despite the loss, saying that Allen's performance, particularly in the fourth quarter, was as impressive a quarterback display as he had ever seen.
There you go.
So I don't know if it's because he finally got fed. I don't know if the cold just did something to his innards, but
feeling a little sneezy.
Seems to be turning the corner, or at least pretending to, because we all know that chess and strategy is a huge part of talking to the media for these guys as well.
True. That is true. But to answer your question, I think I would prefer Jared Cook this week.
Okay. Well, he is ranked one spot ahead, according to Yahoo consensus.
Then I'm right in line with the consensus.
What about that gross tight end, Mike Gesicki? Would you rather have him or Kyle Rudolph, who has inexplicably, in Adam Thielen's absence, scored?
Kyle Rudolph's like the best tight end in the NFL now at this point. All the other ones that are out of here. I mean, you got Kyle Rudolph. That's a set it and forget it at this point. I will say
Kyle Rudolph versus Denver, by the way, Mike Gesicki versus Buffalo.
You tried the Gesicki thing and it didn't work.
I sure did.
Don't do it again. It's not just I'm talking to me. I'm talking to the people. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to Brett. I'm talking to Ragu. He's not even here. We all tried the Gesicki thing last week. It didn't work. Let's not go back to it.
Some of us are stubborn.
Sometimes you got to know when to let some go.
Yeah. Well, everything in its own time. I have him 12 and I have Rudolph 16. Let's move along.
So you have Gesicki, the great Gesicki, over Kyle Rudolph.
I do.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
What
about O.J. Howard? You buying in at all?
No.
Because
against New Orleans?
Against New Orleans, sure. But again, remember, this is not a fun landscape that we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also worth noting that it wasn't just necessarily, oh, you know, this was just the damn Cardinals or whatever, the matchup. Because there was also an opportunity bump. After going for 75%, yeah, third and team targets. There was also, he played 99% of the team snaps after seeing 75% the game prior, the last game we saw him. So I don't know. I think it's worth a shot.
All of these guys are worth a shot. That's not necessarily the question.
I think that if you're looking at this landscape, I think you can, if you don't feel comfortable with any of these other options, I think you can roll O.J. Howard out with a modicum of confidence and not just like, oh, it's just the Cardinals, cast him back into the wire. Like, I would play O.J. Howard over Dwelly. I would play O.J. Howard over maybe Greg Olson. No, that doesn't seem right. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't go back to Gesicki over going back to Howard. That's there. How about that?
So, Matt, you have been preaching stash season since...
Oh, like the preseason.
Yep. And some people thought maybe that was a little premature, regardless.
Some people. Hard to say who.
Now it is cuffing season. Stashing season has melded into cuffing season. And there are some running backs, some who are surging because they got a slow start, maybe because of holdouts, and some who are... Maybe we're worried about the wear and tear on their tires because they're touching the ball like 30 damn times a game. So let's go. I've gone through and sorted by fantasy points per game since some of these guys have missed a little time here and there.
Okay.
Obviously, the player who continues to produce at an elite level regardless is Christian McCaffrey. He's touched the ball at least 25 times in four of his last five games. His backup, as we have previously discussed, is Reggie Bonifon. He's a converted quarterback with some receiving chops. He was a wide receiver as well. He's owned in just 2% of leagues. It's a pretty solid rest of season schedule. They get Atlanta twice and Washington with New Orleans in between. Obviously, New Orleans is a tough matchup. So are you prioritizing Bonifon here, or are you just going to trust that CMC stays healthy?
Well, I would say if we're ranking these backup running back cuff guys, I don't think he's in my top four or five.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I definitely think he's on the radar, but the lack of appeal with him is that he has stone zero standalone value. Like guys like Alexander Mattison, they'll get some burn. Gus Edwards, he gets some usage every now and again. Even Tony Pollard sees the field. Bonifon, yeah, he's hurt, but in that type of vein, like that's the problem with a guy like Bonifon is that he's got no standalone value.
Bonifon. So we aren't sure that he would match, like that he'd see, I don't know, more than 70% of the.
No, they just picked up Mike
there.
Davis, too. Mm-hmm. Like they just picked up Mike Davis. So that could be a thing. If CMC is to get hurt next week, God, please no. But like if that was to happen, then you're looking at a situation where they could be splitting with like him and Mike Davis or whatever.
OK, so for forgetting like Jamal Williams and Kareem Hunt.
No,
right?
those are different.
So
yeah.
Who would then Madison be your number one get?
I think Madison is number one and he should be owned more than he is. Whatever.
He's owned in like 30% of leagues.
Yeah.
It's like, kind of high.
It's kind of high, but it should be honestly like 100%. I all the time. These ownership percentages are, you know, most people aren't listening to the podcast. Most people aren't consuming the content. They're just playing and who goes by the box score. And there you go. That's just the reality of the situation. Like that. It's who produces numbers. That's who gets picked up. So guys that pop like big weeks, that's what happens. That's how the ownership projections work. It's odd, though, because Madison has popped up occasionally for some good work here and there.
He's had double-digit carries three times so far this year, just under 20% of the snap share. Obviously has Denver this week. And then here I think is the problematic piece is that there's so many injuries and there's so much turnover. I mean, we've talked about all of the players that were dinged up, the tight ends and running backs with Matt Burita, and San Francisco has like three top players at each position, or three fantasy relevant players at each position alone that mm-hmm. are banged up. So with the Vikings going on bye in week 12, it's kind of hard to stash someone that, you know, like you probably aren't going to use him this week because Dalvin's on the field.
Well, you're almost likely never going to use him. Like in an ideal situation, Dalvin Cook doesn't get hurt and you never use Alexander Mattison. But the point of the stash is that you're using it just in case. Like,
yeah, but I'd prefer to have him in week 13. I may have to wait till week 13 to stash him because week 12, he's on bye and I might have to move someone else who's actually playing that week into a position. Like that's the tricky piece.
Yeah, theoretically, it depends on your own individual roster and like how many, because like you probably don't need that fifth wide receiver on your roster. You definitely don't need like backup quarterbacks, backup tight ends, anything. I can't imagine.
You might need backup quarterbacks. Only half of the damn starters in the league are playing.
Right. But I mean, that still opens up the entire pool of these other backup quarterbacks to use on your fantasy team. Most waiver wires are probably flush with options. Again, obviously it depends on your league and the settings and everything like that. But for the most part, I think if something is to happen to your starting quarterback, you can go and find a replacement on the waiver wire. You don't necessarily need to be having, you know, Matt Ryan and Jacoby Brissett or something like that.
For what it's worth, week 16, the Vikings will host the Green Bay Packers, and that is obviously a nice matchup.
That's a nice matchup. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he's my favorite.
Who would be number two?
Gus Edwards, I think, is number two. There's not we.
It's funny. I don't even like count him as a backup, but you're totally right that he is.
Yeah, he's backup. He doesn't get a ton of.
I don't count him as a backup because he feels like the third running back. Yeah. Lamar is the first.
Fair point, but yeah, he's a guy that I would definitely consider in this group because.
Sure.
You love the offense.
Yeah.
You love the rushing equity. He doesn't have as much theoretical feature back upside because Mark Ingram doesn't really have feature back upside because he shares the backfield with a quarterback, as you mentioned, and also doesn't get a lot of passing down work.
But he does get a ton of red zone looks. My gosh, he had two red zone looks against New England 2 weeks ago. He's seeing at least one red zone opportunity per week, which is a lot more than a lot of these backups can
say. We also know he's good, too.
Yeah, last year. Gus the Bus was a thing.
Yeah. How do you feel about the LA backs? Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson.
I think we keep trying to convince ourselves that Daryl Henderson is going to be a thing because we don't want Malcolm Brown to be a thing. But I feel like a broken record and that I've said this a million times, but I always remember the moment that Malcolm Brown was could have gone to Detroit and the Rams matched the offer sheet, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
brought him back. And we had this conversation with John Kelly last year. And yes, they did go draft Henderson, but there's obviously a large amount of trust with Brown, regardless of durability or talent or any of that. And so I think you're looking at these two cannibalizing each other if something were to happen to Gurley. I think probably Malcolm Brown would see the goal line opportunities and more of the first early downs work and Henderson will work as the chain mover.
Like a 50-50, 60-40 type split between these two guys. And in an offense that, by the way, is not that inspiring.
Yeah.
Like, Henderson might have been, if Brown was to have been hurt for longer or whatever, he might have been more appealing in this conversation. But as of now, I agree with you. I don't. It looks like that even if Todd Gurley was to get hurt, which like it's one of the more volatile starters in the league with Todd Gurley and the injury, like is you would theoretically count on something happening there, or at least have some reason to believe that an injury could take place. You're looking at one of the least clear splits and also a really bad offense. So terrific.
Leonard Fournette and Reichwell Armstead have been a talking point, mostly because
one,
of
yeah.
Fournette's, both his crazy volume and also his obvious durability issues of
yeah.
staying on the field altogether.
Period. Yeah, he's got a few question marks.
There. But Armstead has yet to receive more than 8 carries, and that was way back in week 4.
Mm-hmm.
He has a snap share of 11%. He's only 2% owned. I do think that he would have – he's one of these few backs, we were talking about Madison, that would – fall into quite a large workload if Fournette were to go down just because of the way the offense is put together.
No, I like him a lot because of that gap of the workload, like you mentioned. Theoretically, if Fournette goes down, there's just so much for him to take over in an offense that we're more excited about now, like we said up at the top, than we probably thought we'd be at this point. So Armstead, despite the fact we just don't see much from him, I like him a lot.
So he would be your number three?
Depending on what happens with Tony Pollard, yeah. Because if Pollard is healthy, then he'd actually probably be two over Gus Edwards, I think.
Zeke Elliott was coming back from that holdout, seeing double-digit carries in the first like month or so of the season. First 3 weeks, I think, of the season, he had like 13 carries in two of his first three games. And then obviously as Zeke shook off that rust. I bet you love that saying, shook off rust.
Shook off the rust, baby.
He was used less.
That's why
less.
That's the best way to get rid of rust is to shake it off. Leave your bike outside too long. Just pick it up and shake it. See how that goes.
So we talked about backup running backs. Do you want to talk about this glut of wide receiver threes every week? We're like, yeah, he's like a flex or wide receiver three, the high floor, lots of upside with this guy, potential ceiling play. I feel like these words and phrases are thrown around easily, but we never really quantify them.
Yes.
So let's go do it. I thought we could maybe look at the rankings, the Yahoo rankings, and pick a few guys that are consistent standouts or consistently placed in the top, you know, like, let's say 50 to 35.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work?
It works for me. Yeah. And credit to you and Brett. This is like a segment of your idea. And I actually think it's a good call because we do throw these terms around. But these are the players that if you're answering like start sit questions on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever, you're getting a lot of these chuckleheads in the answers. Like, do I play Randall Cobb or, you know, Marquise Brown or whatever? Do I play this guy or that guy? I mean, Brown's higher this week because he has a good
matchup. Well, why don't you pick the first one? Why don't you pick the one that is most appealing to you?
I kind of think Randall Cobb is appealing this week. After a big game last week, 100 yards and a touchdown, we know that. And he looks good. And this is another thing Chris Harris and I talked about on his podcast was, like, Randall Cobb looks pretty good this year from, like, an individual standpoint. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, think about when he was having those struggles in Green Bay. Even when he was healthy, it was because he was asked to be like the one or two option in Dallas. He's like the fourth or fifth. And I think that just makes him all the more efficient, even if the volume is not going to be coming his way a ton. But I like this matchup against Detroit, who we know has been really bad on the back end. I mean, they just gave up a damn 131 passer rating to Mitchell Trubisky. So, like,
but Justin Coleman's real good in the slot. And
he's been fine, but he hasn't been like a guy that's just a shutdown player or whatever. I'd
prioritize Coleman over Cobb in terms of performance throughout the season.
Fair. I think that's fair.
I think Gallup is probably of these Dallas receivers, the one in the biggest smash spot.
For sure.
But Cobb did catch six balls in back-to-back weeks, and so this is what we're talking about. Like, this is the floor you have to. All right, so you're going to have an underneath guy who actually has red zone potential.
Yeah.
Which is more than a lot of these other like dink and dunk slot receivers can say.
Yeah, Gallup is like wide receiver 16 too. So it's like there's a huge gap in the rankings between them, and there might not be necessarily in the actual range of outcomes. What about you? Who stands out to you, Liz?
Sammy Watkins is someone I kind of want to talk about. Well, this is why. Like, it's not fun to talk about him. Yeah. Anytime I see a Sammy Watkins question, I debate scrolling past it. Depends how nice the person asking it is and how many emojis they've added to the question. But there's been massive opportunity here for Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
Attached to an explosive offense that we all talk about wanting a piece of. Patrick Mahomes is back under center.
He is the tide that lifts almost all boats, apparently.
Except for Watkins.
Except for Watkins.
I do think, though, if we are going to preach opportunity, opportunity, volume, volume, and he's running over, you know, 35 routes a week, and he's seeing somewhere between 8 and 10 targets a game, I think you have to throw him into this wide receiver 3 mix. I think he is a top 30 play.
And let's talk about this too, why I think this actually is a good suggestion. They play the Chargers. We know that it's the Mexico City
top
game.
Top 40 play, by the way, not top 30.
It's the Mexico City game. Prior to Monday night, the Chargers led the NFL with 85 missed tackles given up. And I think the one thing that Watkins still does pretty well is run in open space, break tackles, make people miss in the open field.
It's a great nug.
I think that could the Cardinals have overtaken the number one spot, by the way, 89 missed tackles, which is emblematic of their general terribleness. But yeah, I think this is actually a pretty good Watkins this week. Maybe a sneaky call. They play on Monday night. So, yeah.
That's one more day for him to get healthy or get hurt.
And he always needs that. Yeah, right. I mean, shit, it might be slipping on a McDonald's bag or whatever happened to Brandon Marshall all those years ago or, you know, whatever. But hey, that's a TBT, baby.
Let's talk about two receivers in New York with the Jets because the Giants are on bye.
Right. The true number one.
The true number one.
True number one.
Your guy, Demaryius
Thomas.
The new possession receiver, or Jamison Crowder, who, like it or not, is having all of the targets funneled through his being.
No one likes it.
No, I think somebody does. I think that person is Adam Gase.
Hey, Crowder in a revenge game this week, too.
Yeah. I mean, there is some sort of method here.
Hell yeah. Listen, no, but I actually like Demaryius Thomas, though. Actually, I think both of these guys are interesting this week because if you look at Washington, they give up the highest completion percentage in the NFL, 73%. Thomas is going to face off with a lot of these outside cornerbacks who are also pretty terrible. Like, they're the beautiful type of defense that blows coverages downfield and gives up plenty of underneath passing. It's just how much do you want to trust the Jets? Like,
and that they won't just run the ball because that's an opportunity. I mean, I feel like
they can't
this,
really do that.
This game, well, that's not true.
Can they run the ball?
I mean, Le'Veon did score last week.
Right. Like, averaged like 3 yards a carry.
Against Washington.
18 for 34 against the great.
Against the Giants. I understand. I think the also this game is going to last like 7 hours.
Really? This
you don't think Jets and Washington, Jets and Redskins isn't going to be like too super slow? Like, oh,
no way. Washington's MO right now is they're running out the clock on the season. Nobody's finishing games faster than Washington right
now.
They're literally running the clock out on the season. They have finished their games faster than anyone else since Bill Callahan took over because all they're doing is establishing the run. Maybe they unveil some great up-tempo short passing offense coming off the bye.
This is a very slow game.
That's what I'm saying, but like a slow-paced game to the point that if they're both running the ball a lot, that game's going to be over so fast. No stoppages, baby. Stay inbounds, run the ball.
Can we talk about Dwayne Haskins for a second, even though this is off, because it's attached to Terry McLaurin? So Adrian Peterson has averaged at least 100-plus total yards since Bill Callahan has taken over, because you're right. All Washington wants to do is establish the run. But there's all of these talks about moving Terry all over the field, and Dwayne Haskins is the starter, and he's had coming off bye, so he's had an extra week with the playbook, blah, 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 blah. And yet I'm seeing all this like, well, you don't want to trust McLaurin with Haskins under center. And I'm like,
that was supposed to be the
appeal.
Aren't
they homies? Like, what the hell?
Guess things haven't gone so well. Maybe Terry's like, man, I'm busting my ass out here, Dwayne, and everyone says you're not trying, so maybe he's pissed. Terry, I actually think he's the perfect example, even though he's ranked as the consensus 22. He should be much lower than that, theoretically, but he does, I think, offers you that appeal as that wide receiver 3 boom bust play, because there's a great chance that he could boom in this game against the Jets and their cornerbacks, who are all miserable. They finally put Tremaine Johnson on IR and just like, that's enough of this. This has never been working anyways. So I look at Terry McLaurin as a guy that, yeah, he could definitely give you another 4 for 39 game, which I believe he's given you back to back the last two games he's played. But there's also a chance you could see another one of his, 90 and one touchdown type lines too. And I would chance that's the volatility I think you're willing to accept from a wide receiver 3.
If you are looking for that upside, but if you want the safe floor that Jamison Crowder offers you. If I asked you how many over under 5 red zone targets over the past 2 weeks for Jamison Crowder, would you go over or under?
Well, now I feel like it's a trick question, so I'm going to say over.
Yeah, it's 6. He scored in back-to-back weeks. That's fluky. Now I'm all thinking about regressing to the mean. But it is ridiculous to me that
this is what the real people out there do. is they get it in their heads about these wide receiver 3s, and like then they come ask us, and we're like, I don't know.
Anyway, I do think that Jamison Crowder, not just because of the last 2 weeks, but because of what we know Adam Gase likes to do, what we saw him do with Jarvis Landry in Miami, is part of the reason that I think. So when you take, like, let's take, like, McLaurin this week is obviously in a better matchup, and it's a little bit different. But I do think you could take, let's say, McLaurin in, like, versus Buffalo, just hypothetically.
Yeah, in a hypothetical world.
And Jamison Crowder versus, give me, and the Giants.
Okay.
Which are you taking? Because one is obviously a floor play. One is obviously a ceiling play.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm interested in McLaurin is because the matchup is right. So in this scenario against Buffalo, where the secondary's generally been pretty good, I would side with the boring floor play and hate my life.
And because of the volume opportunity as
volume
well.
And, I mean, against the Giants in this hypothetical scenario, yes.
So I think I just wanted to point that out, because I think that kind of has to be the tiebreaker. When I am looking at my rosters, I think that's the tiebreaker for me. It's not always talent. It's not always matchup.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a combination.
Hey, how about you want to give some more names that we like this week?
Sure.
How about Hunter Renfro?
I think, I kind of wanted to save him because I had an idea for a down the stretch segment, but okay. Hunter Renfro has been coming on.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I think there's going to be, I think we were expecting or hoping Josh Jacobs to have more of a role in this passing game, and it hasn't happened. And as a result, though, Hunter Renfro has been seeing a solid amount of targets. And he, too, has scored in 2 of his last 3 games, running a good amount of routes. We know that Derek Carr likes to check down. This matches a skill set. We saw the rapport on Hard Knocks as well. I'm surprised it, frankly, took this long. I thought it happened much earlier in the season.
Yeah, and their slot situation's rough.
Well, they're also a defense that gives up a ton of yards through the air too. So there's a constant need to be playing catch up. So that obviously makes him more valuable.
Got some rough looking linebackers on this team too. It's a bad, breaking news, Bengals defense. It's actually bad.
Tyrell Williams has like not scored a lot lately.
It used to be his thing.
Yeah.
That was the reason he was so enjoyable.
To imagine though against the Bengals, like there is no better. We saw it with Mark Andrews, different positions, sir. Sure. Also Waller. I mean, like there's no better get right team, take your medicine team. If you're Terrez Paylor, he likes to say it's a medicine game, than the Bengals for any of these squads. So, I mean, to that end, like you're looking at the Raiders, you're like, well, Tyrell hasn't scored since what, like week three?
Yeah.
I want to say. And Renfro.
Well, he scored against the Texans, which was like week eight or something.
Tyrell Williams hasn't scored since week eight. But before that, he was on a crazy tear, scoring in every game he was a part of. Back-to-back weeks, just three catches. But that's the thing, right? Like, he'd only caught three balls for five straight weeks, except for three of those, he managed to find the end zone. So now it seems like Hunter Renfro is getting more of that love in the red area of the field. Darren Waller hasn't scored in a minute, but the Bengals seem to be a get-right squad for anybody.
Yeah, they're rolling B.W. Webb out there for a lot of snaps.
Have been since week one.
Yeah, so, like, don't kid yourself. That's a good one.
I think Auden Tate might have a good game, too, if you're looking for those other
That's true.
Red zone opportunities here on the other side of the
Ryan
ball
Finley.
Facing the Raiders.
Got to count on the great Ryan Finley. How did Ryan Finley look to you in his first start?
I did not watch that game.
Nice. It was.
I mean, I watched Lamar, and then I was like, who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
We're moving on.
How did Joe Mixon, by the way, have 30 carries?
We talked
for
about this on Sunday.
It's still mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
In a loss. Unreal.
Oh, I had an idea. We're going to play a little word association with each game in a rapid fire kind of way. Matt, I'm going to say the matchup and then you say something. I'll say something. You say the next one. So then I'll go first and we'll go back and forth. Does that make sense?
Sounds good to me.
All right. You read your mind. Let's go. Falcons at Panthers.
Fluky defensive performance last week, right? I mean, there's no way that can happen 2 weeks in a row. There's no like Falcons are coming off a bye. Now they've fixed their defense type situation.
Quinn did hand the playbook off.
We are going to see the Panthers roll here, though, right? Like, I mean, we want to start all our Panthers.
And you want to start Brian Hill, who is a phenomenal DFS value. That is my takeaway.
Cowboys at Lions.
Really many thoughts about this game.
Sorry, you got to use the Lions player.
Right,
sorry about your luck.
Ty Johnson is practicing. I don't know if he'll play. JD McKissick. In a week where there are plenty of buys and at a really scarce position, if you're in a deep team league that's PPR friendly, maybe JD McKissick gives you a little bit of burn. I don't love it, but I might have to like it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about all of these Cowboys pass catchers for the reasons that we talked about earlier.
Jaguars at Colts.
I mean, Nick Foles is the headliner, right? Like, I want to see how he looks. Love that the Colts are giving up the sixth highest completion percentage in the NFL, and they've been eroding from a pass game standpoint. So I'm excited about kind of all of these Jaguars receivers. Theoretically, they don't give up a ton of passing production to outside wideouts, the Colts. They've always kind of been that way. They've funneled things to the middle of the field. So then you got to ask yourself, is this the Seth DeValve game? Is this the Josh Oliver coming out party?
I will definitely bring a bottle of wine and we will find out. It's interesting because I'm interested in the tight ends for the Colts.
Yeah.
We've seen Jack the Dad find the end zone inexplicably a couple of times. He can possibly do it again, but only like three catches.
Some would say he fell into that end zone.
Well, no, he ran. He scampered after the catch. Two weeks ago.
I know. Is it only running backs that fall into the end zone? Like when we're
I think Jack Doyle and Jason Witten can fall into the end zone.
Oh my God. Yeah, Jason.
I think both of those guys can. But I do think this might be the opportunity. Everyone's off of Eric Ebron because it's been Doyle who's been hot in the red area of the field. But Eric Ebron had a ton of targets last week. So I think maybe this is a regression to the mean moment. And I want to see how that is distributed. So that's what I'm keeping an eye on. But I do have Ebron ranked higher than Doyle because of perceived volume.
Nice. Bills at Dolphins.
I mean, I think Josh Allen is a phenomenal DFS start. I love Josh Allen as a top 10 quarterback this week.
Dolphins defense kind of getting better, though. I mean, kind like ever so slightly.
Yeah, but I still think that Josh Allen and his rushing ability against this run defense is pretty solid.
He hasn't thrown a pick in like four straight games either.
Well, thank you for jinxing my pick now.
I mean, he's kind of due for a pick, don't you think?
Stop. What are you doing?
I used the damn Dolphins defense in a DFS lineup.
I saw that.
Which is...
Deep breath.
quite a thing to do.
Way to go.
I mean, I wanted to pay, you know, you want to pay up for some studs. This was the logic with, this may sound like an asshole, but this is the logic that I used with the Ravens last week. They're $13. I can pay up with more studs. Dolphins are $11. I can pay up to more studs.
Everybody used the Ravens last week, Matt.
Yeah, and also they're the Ravens. They're not the Dolphins. That's why I said it was going to make me sound like an asshole.
Texans at Ravens. Speaking of the Ravens, this is it. Like, this yeah, is this the is game of the week.
Yeah. So I'm writing in my preview column.
Oh, great.
One. About this matchup. And, you know, if you rewind the clock, and this is the fun part about these mythical, like, every week horse races of awards or whatever. Like, Deshaun Watson was clear, like, number two to Russell Wilson in the MVP standing. Last time he took up another MVP candidate was in Kansas City. Big win over Patrick Mahomes, scored three total touchdowns, completed over 70% of his passes. Does he have a similar performance in him here in a real tough spot going into Baltimore? And I think the key to this game is in the two secondaries, because they've both been like they've both transformed from where they started the year.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore in opposite directions. Baltimore traded for Marcus Peters, who's filled in seamlessly and has become like the perfect aggressive gambler to a team that has a really good offense. Then you got the Texans on the other side of the field trading for Gary and Conley, and then they pick up Vernon Hargraves this week. And
oof.
Vernon Hargraves, talk about getting let the door hit you oof. On the way out. Bruce Arians said
that is a bust throw, definition bust throw.
Yeah, Bruce Arians, when asked if it was a tough decision to let go of Vernon Hargraves, who is young and was a former first round pick, he said, "Not hard." So, whoops.
Whoops. I would downgrade Carlos Hyde in this matchup because the Ravens' run defense has been much better.
What are you going to do with Will Fuller if he comes back? Play him or not play him?
Oh, you're mentioning the secondary in Baltimore. I think, you know, it's interesting. I imagine probably, I mean, Marcus Peters will go all over. I don't think there's going to be any shadowing in this one. But I do think between Will Fuller's ability, between his speed and Marcus Peters' want, proclivity towards improvisation, I think that ooh. There's a situation in which Will Fuller gets yeah, loose, and if I'm like trying to throw a dart towards the ceiling, I'm going to throw it at Will Fuller, and he does fall into that high upside wide receiver three category.
Love it.
Broncos at Vikings.
Ugh, I mean, what is there to say here? I don't like, you know who to play. Play Stephon Diggs. Play Kirk Cousins, play Dalvin Cook. You can play Kyle Rudolph and Noah Fant because you need tight ends. And, like, that's really about it.
Courtland, I mean, Sutton, I think sure. I think there's probably going to be a lot of Philip Lindsay owners who have questions here. I do think you
tough
probably
spot.
Leave Royce Freeman on the bench here,
as
although Royce Freeman
weeks.
Has been getting most of the work in the passing game. So that limits Lindsay's usability, obviously. But I think that I still think Lindsay's so dang good, and the matchup is very tough. We saw what they did to Zeke last week, but I think probably I roll Lindsay out as a RB3 if I have to.
Jets at Washington.
I love this game.
You do love this. This
I love this game. There's so much, despite being a bad matchup, there's so much fantasy potential in this one. Production is going
to
come from somewhere. Points are going to come from somewhere.
Do they have
mind
to?
Mind the crap.
But couldn't you see this easily being like 10-7? These are the two of the worst offenses in the NFL. There's a scenario for sure where, you know, guys on New York go off. I think Sam Darnold is worth it because you don't have to, like in DFS, he's only $22 or something like that. One of the cheapest starters available unless you want to play Mitchell Trubisky at 21, but you don't want to play Mitchell Trubisky at 21. Sam Darnold could have a good game against this defense, and you're really not asking him to do too much, but I don't see anybody having a great ceiling in this spot.
Guess the projected point total.
Oh, isn't it like 38?
37.5 or 38.5. It's moved a point. That's gross. I still think it's going to be fun.
Do you expect to see Darius Geis?
Oh, that is a good question. We should talk about that. I have a thought about Darius Geis. I'm glad you brought it up. So there's a lot I have been getting in my DMs questions about Darius Geis because of Peterson's age and, you know, the draft capital used to acquire Geis. Here's my personal take. Why would you risk this guy getting healthy? You know the season is lost. You know that he is a potential future piece for a team, well, under Dan Snyder, that's never going to materialize, but at least in your wildest dreams might.
Yeah.
So why let him get a couple of reps? Let him get out there and just feel himself a little bit. But if he's not going to see more than 7 carries ever, let Peterson break all the damn records. continue to establish the run, use him up, and just evaluate what you have and let him feel like he's part of the squad, get some reps under his belt with guys.
That's kind of how I feel about this too. I don't see like guys coming back to a big workload. Also, if he does, he's coming back to a big workload on Washington's offense, which, as we're saying,
it's washed.
Sucks.
It is washed.
It's Washington is washed. Yes. I'm rooting for Darius Geis, but at this point, he's become like more fan fiction than anything else.
Saints at Buccaneers. Oh, there's some stuff here. We haven't talked about this one.
A lot of stuff here. I mean, this game should be fun. No Marshawn Lattimore, most likely, for the Saints. Big deal for Jameis Winston, who had one of his classic... Ugh, I mean, Jameis Winston is QB8 on the year in fantasy. It's not...
No biscuit.
It's all biscuit or nothing, or you're going starving, because like it's not been a situation where we're seeing steady production week to week. It's been big games or flop games.
Intermittent fasting. That's what the millennials call skipping breakfast.
Yeah, right. Does this account as intermittent fasting if you have a green juice or a green smoothie?
Yes, because there's roughage. Also, intermittent like I did that 2 years ago. It didn't work for me.
All right, what it's worth. All right, hipster. Look at that.
No, just like...
I don't think it's a good idea.
How did this get popular now? Did Oprah talk about it? Like, I don't understand how this is popular.
Is Oprah still the taste? Is she...
I don't know.
For the people who are intermittent fasting, are you listening to Oprah's podcast? Does Oprah have a podcast? Oprah's got to have a podcast.
She does.
Right?
It's called Super Soul. I don't know. I don't know what it's called. It's not on my list. But I heard about it because Brian Caruso, an old producer he's not old, but a producer who no longer works here but did at the time, told me about it at the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try that when I get home. I did for a month and lost a pound. It wasn't
good. It's not good. It's not a good thing. Don't do it out there if you're trying to lose some weight.
Anyway, back to biscuits.
Back to Oprah. It's called Oprah Super Soul Conversations.
Nailed it.
Lady Gaga was on recently, if you know.
I mean,
I know the Venn diagram of Lady Gaga fans and fantasy football fans is pretty big. So just providing.
She was trending recently because she forgot a whole part of her origin story.
What?
Yeah. Like she was like, I forget, glamour party or something or other.
She's got some bangers. Yeah.
It's all about Shallow for me.
Shallow?
Yeah, from Star is Born. Oh, go on with your fantasy football.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael Thomas is on the edge of glory for sure.
Wow.
And against this awful secondary, he should be the wide receiver one on the week.
That makes sense to me. I like all the Saints in this one. I like Kamara to bounce back. I like Cook to get going. I like Drew Brees to bounce back. Yeah, hell yeah.
I like Traquan Smith in this one.
Don't push it.
Listen, 83 snaps.
Don't get greedy.
83% of the snaps in week 10, and he was the offense's main slot receiver in his first game since week 5. That's a solid matchup. I mean, these are all good matchups against Tampa Bay, but I think we know he has a big playability. We've seen him flash it. Maybe Ted Ginn has more familiarity with Drew Brees. That didn't work out too well last week. So I think Traquan Smith is the big swing here. He may find his way onto the fantasy damage list.
There we go.
I'm not sure, though.
Cardinals at 49ers.
Oh, this is the Kenyon Drake rematch. We talked about the receivers and the 49ers. We didn't really talk about the Cardinals in this one. David Johnson, as you very astutely pointed out on Sunday night, does not look like his former self.
Oh, no. Have you seen the video going around on Twitter?
I didn't want to mention it because I think it's kind of mean.
It is a little mean, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think that you can make someone a hero and then... It's like you always say, Matt, you ain't never not had a bad back. Isn't that what you always say? How does it go?
Ain't nobody used to have a bad back.
God damn it. Anyway, I think he probably has a bad back.
By the way, my therapist has a bad back right now, and I told her, ain't nobody
used to... Your brain therapist.
Yes, my brain therapist, okay. Not my back therapist. I don't have a back therapist because I didn't used to have a bad back. She comes to me, my back's been bothering this week. I said, well, you know what they say, ain't nobody used to have a bad back. She goes, what? She's, sorry. Keep it moving. Let's talk about my personal problems instead.
It's a bit. It's all a bit. Anyway, so David Johnson's washed, and Kenyon Drake went off against these 49ers 2 weeks ago, had a wildly improbable outing, but it did, and so now everyone's expecting a repeat. I don't know if that's a fair expectation.
I don't think it is. You should.
Also, I think the 49ers, especially coming off of a very close division loss that they lost because of a rookie kicker, frankly, are going to be a little ticked, especially in this another division game.
I would hesitate to use too much of what happened last game to project a lot of rushing optimism for the Cardinals, because
you mean not Monday night, but the Cardinals.
Yeah, yeah. Their previous matchup. Yes. Because short week in your own building for Arizona is a lot different than, you know, a 4:05 p.m. Eastern time start in San Francisco after they're coming off a loss. I think there's a chance that the 49ers could really impose their will here and make the matchup look more like what people thought it would for Arizona last time. But at the same time, I will say there is no player making football more enjoyable to watch right now this side of Lamar Jackson than Kyler Murray. That guy's been amazing the last 2 weeks. I'm super excited about the I'm more excited about the Cardinals right now than I thought I would be to start the season, because it's like you thought, you know, oh, you know, the Cardinals would be fun but kind of a gross offense, but like Murray's been legitimately awesome the last 2 weeks, I think, when you actually just sit down and watch him play. So I kind of don't want to bet against him right now. If I had to start him at in fantasy, I would think about playing a guy like Derek Carr or one of those type of streamers over him. But like if you have Kyle Allen as a streaming option or something like that, I think I might chance Murray over him, because I just believe in the way he's playing so much right now.
I know earlier we mentioned that Matt Burrito was banged up. There's a lot of Mostert talk.
Oh, yeah. The streets are talking about the mustard man.
And Coleman looked a little stiff coming up at some point on Monday night. You know, he's obviously also had durability concerns. My issue with Mostert, though, is that everyone, I don't think that there's a lock into volume with Mostert the same way you have it with Burrito. Like, Burrito's going to get you double-digit carries, double-digit touches. You know that. I think then, and obviously having Juszczyk back helps the situation, but like how do I know that Mostert and Coleman aren't going to like get the ball near the goal line and either Coleman's going to get it or
Jeff Wilson again.
Yeah, like Jeff Wilson comes in. So I think people are overvaluing. I'm not saying he's not a good play, but I also feel like people are overvaluing or need to manage their expectations with him a little bit.
I think managing expectations is a great suggestion, because I think Raheem Mostert, whether he's just the freshest of the bunch, sometimes he looks like their best, most explosive back. I mean, Coleman, obviously, he's been getting workhorse-type touches of late. Did not get a touch in overtime, though. Mostert got all that work. So I think that's what's got people really excited. But at the same time, yeah, I don't think you can really count on the workload, for sure.
Bengals at Raiders.
Play all your Raiders.
Patriots at Eagles.
Are we supposed to be alternating?
I mean, yeah, but we broke that rule like 3 games in.
Super Bowl rematch that we mentioned off the top. I expect the game to look quite a bit different because these two, especially the Patriots defense, much better. I don't think the Eagles will be scoring 50-plus points in this one. I want to see, is there any improvement to the passing offense? Because we talked about going into the bye how the Eagles kind of need to sort of reinvent themselves. They're running the ball extremely well, and I think the Patriots, when you look at them from a defense perspective, obviously everyone knows that their pass defense is great. They're number 2 in DVOA right now, but they're 14th against the run. I think if the Eagles want to, number 1, win this game at home, but number 2, want to move the ball in your best fantasy bets, are both guys in the backfield. You know, we're talking, you mentioned like Kareem Hunt, Jamal Williams. Those guys are not like,
I think you're going to take my point. I think we have the same one.
Handcuffs. I think both of these guys are like, they're both playable week to week.
Oh, I think this is a Miles Sanders game. I think this is the week that we have been talking about since August, the point at which Sanders' role becomes much more clearly defined and potentially overtakes Jordan Howard's. Jordan Howard is still much more game flow dependent, and I do expect that the Eagles will be playing from behind. Sanders has incredibly efficient. He's been incredibly efficient through the air. He has converted 100% of his looks for 4 straight games. We know that he is more featured in the passing game, and I think this is going to be his coming out opportunity. When people talk about like, oh, Miles Sanders, it game, his star turn, I think it's this week.
Maybe I've just become too much on the hope is poisoned method on this particular situation. I just don't believe that's actually ever going to happen this year. I think we'll continue to see a 1A, 1B situation with these two, but I could be wrong about that. And my big question with the Patriots is their offense, their passing offense, are they good enough to take advantage of what was once a juicy matchup, but they're getting healthy there in Philadelphia.
Their starters are back, so.
I think their starters are still a little problematic, but they're not like CFL guys
toast.
Back. Yeah, they're not just literal burnt pieces of toast back there.
We'll see. I think also Mohamed Sanu, a lot of people are talking about. I don't like to mess with that because I think he's a better real life player than fantasy player.
I'm going to mess with it. I'm sorry.
You're going to do it?
I'm going to do it, yeah.
Because out of necessity or because you want to do it?
In daily fantasy, I'm going to do
it. Oh, okay.
Because the price is right.
Yes.
The price is right. The volume was there last week or last night. Last time they played, the volume was there. So, yeah, I'm going to do it.
Bears at Rams.
Liz, you're going to be at this game.
I am.
How excited are you?
I'm actually excited. I am excited.
I mean, it's going to be, I think you got to be much more excited to actually be going because at least it'll be something as opposed to like watching these two teams on television.
Well, I'm watching a mistake versus a fraud.
Yeah. Oh, man. Banged in a big spot. Trubisky. Yeah. I mean, what can you say? I think he gets rocked in this game.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he gets rocked in this game. And then on the other side of the field, I think the Bears defense hasn't been elite, but they could really get going against this offensive line. I mean, there's nothing.
But the Rams are at home and Jared Goff is markedly better at home than on the road. And the onus on this whole offense is their ability to get the run moving. And they could do that against the Bears, who still, without Akeem Hicks, have been vulnerable against the run. Can Todd Gurley do it? I don't know.
I think that's the problem with Todd Gurley is that there's just no predict, like there's no predictability. There's no predicting his usage. There's no like patterns to take. I think he can still play, but he's now like, if this was this version of Todd Gurley slapped into the 20, which I don't even know if that this 2018, 2017 version of the Rams offense can even exist with this version of Todd Gurley. But let's just say in a hypothetical situation, all those conditions are equal. I think this version of Todd Gurley could be like a solid RB2 in fantasy just on how he looks. But like in this situation, combined with everything else, he's an impossible player to trust.
Well, I think defenses saw what the Patriots did to Jared Goff in the Super Bowl, and they saw him wilt under pressure. He couldn't handle it when the moment was the biggest. Not a big surprise there. And so now they've copied that scheme and he just can't get beyond it, right? Like he's just, you don't know how to beat him.
Yeah.
And then if he's, they're stacking boxes every week to stop the run, the O-line's a mess. So he feels already nervous and won't plant his feet. I do think though that like Cooper Kupp's got to see a solid, like that's going to reverse itself.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it sucks about the Rams. They were fun to watch, but they're like one of the teams I could skip over every week watching and not feel bad about it because they're just like, it's one thing to make excuses for the quarterback, like, but they're not the only team in the NFL playing with a bad offensive line, you know?
Yeah, he was a number one overall pick. You can't. I mean, this is also the Baker Mayfield argument. Like, you had a bad O-line last year, too.
Yeah.
The Rams O-line is worse this year than it was last year. But I think if you are going to be a franchise quarterback who's getting that big money and you're, you know, a top five draft pick, then that doesn't get to be your excuse. This isn't Gardner Minshew, right? No. Like this isn't a later round pick or a backup guy who's still managing.
This isn't even Nick Foles. Like we're talking about Nick Foles is an ecosystem dependent player. It's just tough when, you know, because things don't stay perfect forever.
Think about Case Keenum in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have any pressure. He looked freaking great, right? He had no pressure back then. Of course he looked great. And then he gets a giant deal to go to Denver and we see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. So do you know Anthony Costanzo is a free agent next year?
Didn't know that.
Yeah. I want to see where he lands. I'm interested in that move. Anyway, going on. The big Monday night game at Estadio Azteca, Chiefs at Chargers.
I want to see if the Chargers can establish the run again because they've really worked hard to do it the last few weeks. I think that could be a real foil in a game that has the highest implied highest total projected on the board right now. If the Chargers are really able to come out and can control the clock with Melvin Gordon, who looks better and better coming off that holdout after looking real rough to start, that could play a foil to what is, like I said, the highest projected total on the slate. So we know the Chiefs can be run on. I mean, Derrick Henry ran over them with authority last week. I think Melvin Gordon could do the same.
I think you're going to see a lot of Melvin Gordon in the first half and a lot of Austin Ekeler in the second half.
Because you think the Chiefs will get that lead.
The Chargers are going to try to play keep away at the top of the game if they can. Keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' arms. He's going to do some crazy mid-air jump, left-handed, on-the-move throw. probably to Sammy Watkins just to spite you. It'll be
hey, I gave you a reason it can work out, all right?
It'll be amazing. I mean, Tyreek Hill isn't going to always produce 100 plus yards. Like, he could, but he probably isn't. And so that's also part of the reason that Watkins becomes interesting regardless. Then come halftime, they're going to have to adjust. And also, Mike Williams was seeing a ton of targets, but since Wisenhunt was fired, his volume has dwindled considerably, and it's been much more of a run-focused squad. So I think Austin Ekeler, then, we know his usage in the passing game is going to see a lot more burn in quarters 3 and 4.
It's just with the Chargers right now, they just have such a thin margin of error. Like, in order to control that script, like I said, that's totally possible. But then if they get into the situation where you're projecting quickly, they could be dead in the water, because Frank Clark and Chris Jones are healthy now, and they're a much better pass defense. And we saw what happened against a really bad pass rush from the Raiders on Thursday night, completely throttled the Chargers. So there's a chance that the Chargers could control this game. But like I said, the margin for error is so thin, and the other scenario is such a disaster.
Well, that's going to do it for us. I will not be here on Sunday night, as Matt mentioned, but Matt will be back on Sunday night with our Week 11 recap. I'll be at the matchup of the century, Goff versus Trubisky, on Sunday night. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz_FF. That's at Matt Harmon _BYB. And we are out.